Coming up on this edition of the Golf Digest podcast, we wrap up an exciting President's Cup and have a chat with one of the PGA Tour's most engaging players, Harold Varner III.
My God, my swing feels like an unfolding lawn chair.
Well, why do they even have water if you're not supposed to hit it there?
Because it's fun! We're having fun!
What is this, custom? Mine's off the rack.
I wish Tiger Woods was here to help me with this.
We'll do it live!
Welcome back to the Golf Digest podcast presented by Whoop. I'm Alex Myers. Today I'm joined in studio by Sam Wyman, Keeley Levins, and we have Dan Rappaport on the phone fresh off his flight from Melbourne. Dan, how are you doing?
Yeah, it's actually not that big a time difference from Australia to the West Coast. It's 19 hours, which is really just minus 5 hours, so I'm okay.
All right. Sure. Well, I'm actually pretty tired. I don't know about you guys, staying up, watching some golf.
Those are late nights.
Late nights. Saturday especially, or well, what was it? Friday here, Saturday
yeah.
there.
Yeah.
But it was obviously a lot of fun. Ended up being a lot closer, I think, than most of us thought. 16-14 win by the U.S. Dan, what, you know, at what point, I mean, I guess from the first session, right, we realized that this wasn't going to be the cakewalk that it was for the U.S. 2 years ago at Liberty National.
Yeah, I had some suspicions all the way going back to Hero. I wrote an article the week before about the travel that they would have to do. Mm. You know, leaving 3 hours after the Hero ended, taking a 3-hour trip that ended up taking 26 hours, stopping at Acapulco and then dealing with a 16-hour time change. I thought landing on Monday was a little bit late, and then having only 2 days to adjust to a course that is so different from what they see on a normal basis. That I never thought it was going to be a cakewalk. I thought it was going to take them a little bit to hit their stride, and they did. I think they came out extremely flat on Thursday. You know, you can't say for sure that that was due to jet lag or due to travel, but I definitely don't think it helped. And the internationals were clearly more up for it, and they punched them in the face very early, but they failed to deliver the knockout blow. That was the takeaway that Ernie admitted after it finished, was that they had him in a headlock, which Ernie would know how that feels. He likes headlocks. But they didn't, you know, they didn't go for their throat. They didn't slit the jugular. So they had their chance to really put the U.S. down, put them to sleep, take a 9-1 or even an 8-2 lead, or even a, right, you know, 7-3 lead. But 6.5 to 3.5, the U.S. just kind of kept hanging around.
Yeah, no, I mean, you mentioned it really could have been 9-1 on Friday. Obviously, Patrick Cantlay made a huge putt on 18. Justin Thomas ended up making that huge putt to win their match on 18, and they flipped it back to 6.5 to 3.5. Sam, what, you know, were you surprised? What did you take overall from how this all ended? Was it kind of what Dan said?
Yeah.
Kind of saw the U.S. get into it as the week went on?
I kind of think of it as like it's a movie that you've seen a bunch of times before, and while you're watching it, you're sort of wishing for an outcome that you know is not going to happen. Mm. That's kind of what this was like, because it was super engaging, super exciting. It was probably, from a strictly entertainment standpoint, one of the most entertaining President's Cups. Mm. However, I kind of feel like it, you know, when the international team continues to lose, it detracts from the overall,
right,
sort of value, for lack of a better word, of the experience. And now you take into account all the things that Daniel mentioned that were in the international's favor. You know, this iconic, yes, course that should play into their strengths. I mean, it's there. For a lot of players, it's a foreign course to a lot of Americans. The travel was a nightmare. You had some, you know, early week controversy with certain players. They're, you know, the best player in the world wasn't there. So you had all these factors contributed to the international team having a chance to really take this one, and then building this big lead, and then still not winning.
Right.
And again, I great event. I love the President's Cup. I still get excited for it every other year. But if they can't win this year, you know, when are they going to win?
Yeah, it's a good point.
Well,
go ahead, Dan.
Yeah, I think it's, if you look at the roster, it was probably the weakest international team maybe ever. So I think when are they going to win is basically, they need their young players to develop and continue on the trajectory that they're on. So it's like Sungjae Im and Joaquin Neiman, mm-hmm, and Hideki is still young, and Abraham Ancer. I think they're banking on those four being the core of these teams, and those guys are all, maybe they're not ranked highly enough right now, but, you know, they're hoping that in 2 years, especially Neiman and Im, are top 10 players. So I think if you're on the international side, you have to be extremely encouraged by the way your young players fared. And you have to be encouraged that, you know, Ernie found a way to take this roster. I think their average rank was somewhere around like 50 in the world compared to 12 for the U.S. and be this close. And I think you have to trust that in 2 years' time and down the road, your team won't be, and this is going to sound blunt, as bad as it was this year. You're hoping that the young players move up in the world rankings and that there isn't this huge talent disparity like there was this year.
Yeah, no, but Sam makes a good point about, you know, the U.S. finds a way to win every year. It usually wins pretty easily. And I thought, Keeley, the same thing. A few years ago, we had this discussion about the Solheim Cup, and now it's flipped, though. It's obviously Europe has won this year and has made it very competitive all of a sudden. So these things can change. And to Dan's point, that the young players are a key to that. But, you know, you could look at the U.S. side and say they have a lot of young players who weren't even on this team. Matthew Wolf, Colin Morikawa, guys like that who are coming up as well.
Absolutely.
So, but I don't know, Keeley, at some point, though, do you kind of wish the internationals would win as well? Because right now the overall history of this event is so lopsided.
It is, but I totally understand what Sam's saying, but I think that at the same time, like, the amount of energy that was injected into this event just by them being this close this year, I think is as valuable as a win.
Mm.
And I think that really importantly this year, the international team felt like so much more of a cohesive unit. And I think that's a really hard thing to do when, you know, you have players coming from all over the world. It's not like the Solheim Cup where it's right. Europe, you know? And I think that Ernie created an environment that is going to produce a winning team if they can continue that team environment in years to come.
It sounds like what everyone's describing is, you know, in traditional sports, it's like a rebuilding year. The only thing that, you know, it's like, this is a rebuilding year. You have, you have young talent. You realize you're going to take your lumps in the early going, but it's going to pay dividends down the road. The only part that undermines that equation is that they've never been good or they've never been strong. So, but you know, I think if that is true, and I hope it is, because I really want this to be, you know, continue to be an exciting event, is I think they should really consider having Ernie be a captain, you know, for several years
maybe.
On.
I can guarantee you he's got the first call. he's the first choice. He's the right of first refusal, certainly for 2021.
Well, I got to ask you, Dan, because Ernie had been kind of coy about these advanced metrics that they were using. And actually, they were working with 15th Club, who we had Justin Ray on just a few weeks ago, who is the head of content for 15th Club. So they had a lot of interesting things going on there. Some people were looking at some of the pairings, especially after they broke up some of the successful pairings on day one. People said, what are they doing? He was following a plan, and he actually said that he was going to let everybody know more about that plan. But when they lost, he then on Sunday decided, he said, well, I'm sorry, guys, I lied. I'm not going to go into it. But do you have any more idea about what kind of that plan was and what specifically they were looking at?
No, I didn't get any sort of inside look. I just think they probably were looking at which players' games match up best with each other in terms of, I think, more so for the foursomes and the four ball. You know, which guys, based on their shot charts or based on, you know, what areas of their game, the strength, which one of those complement each other. And it was sort of the same process, I think, that the 2018 European Ryder Cup team used. So I don't have any sort of insights, but I think it is interesting, and I think it's very smart that they went the analytics route, because Ernie, and he said this on Saturday night, he said, look, obviously the Americans are deeper than us.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he wasn't going to go toe-to-toe with them and try and beat them that way. He had to use guile. He had to, you know, use his off-speed stuff for a baseball term, because he knew he couldn't just go head-to-head with a team that featured this many world-class players with his, you know, CT Pans and with his Hao Tong Lees. And he was a total another story this week. He was completely bizarre. It was a weird one. But, you know, I think it was smart of them to go that route, because he felt like gave them the best chance rather than just trying to, you know, trot out your best guys and lose to the Americans' best guys.
Kind of like Billy Beane with the lowest payroll in the league and trying to sort of squeeze some
money balling it.
Look, Ernie did a great. I want to ask you about Hao Tong Lee in a second, because you can't just say that and
move on.
And I know we've seen some stuff on Twitter and rumors, but before we move on to that, I do want to say I have one bone to pick with Ernie. He had a red hot player in Abraham Answer. And I know Abraham Answer wanted to play against Tiger Woods, but Tiger Woods put himself out there in that first match on Sunday. He, in my estimation, wasted his best player going up against Tiger Woods that last day. I think he wasted a guy.
Think about it on the other side. Yes, Tiger was playing so well, so maybe this wasn't ever really going to happen. But if Answer had beaten Tiger,
sure.
Think about the message that that would have sent throughout the whole golf course.
And maybe they were questioning, you know, how good Tiger actually felt. Like, he had taken some of the matches off. Like, maybe his back hurts.
Perhaps.
And
that's true.
In that scenario, Answer could have taken him, but...
Okay, that's true.
Right, you're right, Alex. I mean, a lot of people were saying, why not put Hau Tong out first?
And yeah, just waste
like, literally sacrifice
him. Okay, so speaking of Hau Tong, he clearly would have been the guy. He didn't play, the first 2 days. He only played the third day because there's a rule that you have to play at least a match before. What happened?
It's like Little League.
It's like Little League.
His parents called and complained already.
Kiwi hockey rules.
I mean, this guy is a world-class player. We've seen him shoot 63 at the Open Championship. What is going on where he would become such a liability for this team?
So he hadn't been playing that well in the lead-up. No disrespect to the China Tour Championship. Where he finished second a couple weeks ago, but he didn't have a top 10 on any major tour since May. So he was struggling with his game, and then he fired his caddy after the DP World Championship in Dubai, and he showed up this week with his physio, his like physical therapist, who didn't speak any English, and had very little, if any, caddy experience as his caddy. So that definitely didn't send a great message to the rest of the team how seriously he was taking this. And then he, in the practice rounds, he was the only guy on the team who didn't listen to Ernie. You know, Ernie, part of what made him such a great captain is he knows his course probably better than anyone. He holds a course record, and you know, he's won some tournaments there. Hau Tong made it clear that he wasn't going to listen to Ernie's club suggestions. Like, on the first hole, he told everybody with a certain wind, you got to hit iron. Hau Tong decided to hit driver. Even in the one time that he did play, he hit driver, despite what Ernie said. And, you know, I heard from multiple people that, who are sort of, you know, sources inside the international side, that everyone was so bought in what Keeley was saying. They were much more of a unit, except for Hau Tong. And I heard he missed some dinners. He missed some meetings. Wow. He didn't really buy in like the rest of the 11 did. And I think if Ernie didn't have to play him, he probably wouldn't have.
That's incredible. And you know, to that point, in the trophy ceremony, Chris Powers, he took a screenshot of this. He didn't take video, Sam, don't worry. screenshot of Hau Tong Lee texting while Ernie Els is talking and giving a very gracious, you know, loser's speech, consent, whatever you want to call it. And here you have one of the players just not even looking, paying attention. All the other players locked in, looking. And, you know, if you just saw that one thing, you'd say, okay, maybe it's a young guy just making a little mistake. But, like, clearly to your point, Dan, there was a lot of other things going on there. And certainly he didn't play well at all. He was terrible.
Another thing I'll mention is, like, I was talking to him during the media availability on Wednesday. And I was asking him, you know, what are you sort of expecting from your first tee shot in the President's Cup, you know, like compared to all the other nervous first tee shots you've hit? And he was like, and this is before the pairings came out, like 3 hours before the pairings came out. And he goes, well, I'm not playing four ball, so I don't know. That was his reaction.
Weird.
And no one else was giving up the pairings. But he basically told me then that he wasn't playing. And I think when he was told that he wasn't playing, he probably already wasn't really bought in.
Yes.
And then he was doubly not as bought in.
Right.
He was kind of like, you know what? They don't want to play me. Fine.
I mean, people talk about Patrick Reed being like a toxic person, but this sounds next level. Like, level of just like non-engagement in a team atmosphere. I feel like you never hear about that.
That might be a great segue into Patrick Reed, because the distinction you can make between Hau Tong Lee and Patrick Reed is Patrick Reed had the potential and has been a sort of core element of all these U.S. teams, right? Like a guy who the U.S. could live and die by a Patrick Reed in some of these events because of how he gets up for it. And obviously
It's like, say what you want about Patrick Reed, but he cares about winning.
Right.
For sure.
You know, that's the one thing he probably cares the most about is winning for his team. So, yeah, I mean, it's a different type of problematic presence.
All right, let's get into Patrick Reed. Obviously, he made waves the entire week. We knew it was going to be a weird week coming off that controversial penalty at the Hero World Challenge. But I don't think we expected all of this stuff to happen. Brushing shoulders with Cameron Smith in between holes during one match. You know, his caddy obviously doing more than brushing shoulders with a fan, getting ejected. And all the while, he played pretty poor golf until the final day. Dan, you know, we've called this guy Captain America now for a few years, but we really can't call him that anymore, right? I mean, he did not help the U.S. team this week until the final day.
Yeah, I mean, he's 0-6 in his last six team matches, right, in these team competitions. He won the singles at Le Golf National. I don't remember who he beat. And then he took CT Pan to the woodshed this week. But yeah, I don't know how you can be. I mean, maybe you're Captain America, but you're not winning very many battles if you are Captain America. I think he was like 10-4-4 to start his team play career overall, and now he's like 12-10-4.
Right.
So he's got a very average record now. And, you know, I think the reason he was Captain America is because he was this person that everyone could rally behind. He was like the leader of the team. He was the heart of the team. Mm-hmm. And now he goes from being the heart of the team and the core to being a sideshow and a distraction and a guy that the other players, you know, tolerate being there rather than really rally behind. So I think the momentum that he had early in his career as sort of the mascot for Team USA is certainly done. And it feels like it's passed on to Justin Thomas, mm-hmm, who really has kind of emerged over. He was one of the only guys who did anything at Le Golf National, and then he was great until sort of the last 27 holes he played over in Australia. But yeah, it feels like Justin Thomas has emerged now as the leader of these teams.
I thought it was pretty interesting that Tiger had an Instagram post yesterday after the President's Cup, and it was, "I couldn't have asked for a better group to be captain for." And I would ask, is that true? Could have done a little better. Yeah. And again, golf aside, but when you factor in all the things that make up a team and being a captain of players that you want to represent, having that be an issue you're dealing with all week cannot be something that you welcomed.
Right.
Because it was just, again, we talked about it last week, the dynamic of defending a guy or sort of embracing a guy who's had some allegations of bending the rules is really weird. And then just some behaviorally, you know, he was ruthlessly heckled there, mm-hmm, at times. And I don't condone that because that's difficult for anyone. But then engaging with the fans and doing the ear and the shovel. It's just again, who was the guy that was Brendan Todd? We talked, right, you know, mm-hmm, wouldn't Brendan Todd have just been an easier guy to be a captain for? I think he would have been.
Well, right, you talk about awkwardness, and you have a guy, and again, this is, you know, this was Tiger's decision, but you bring a guy who onto the team who everybody's like, well, who can he even play with? And other than Tiger, and they didn't even end up playing together, he got stuck with Webb Simpson, got stuck with him,
yeah,
because he's, you know, probably the most easygoing guy on the team, right? And so I'm saying you kind of limit your options when you bring a guy like that on who you can't even pair up with other guys.
Well, I think we need to remember that when he chose Patrick Reed, it was before any of this stuff happened. And
right,
when he chose Patrick, it was like a couple of weeks after he had won the Northern Trust, or maybe a month, I don't know. And he had kind of faded from the news. You know, the sores from Le Golf National had sort of healed up, and he hadn't really made headlines for a negative reason for a little while. So I don't think that Tiger saw this coming at all.
Yeah.
And then when it did happen, it was so late. I mean, if we think about when the penalty happened, it was on Saturday. So it's 5 days before the first tee shot. What do you do at that point? And then something that we were talking about when we were on the ground there is the interesting parallel was Danny Willett at the 2016 Ryder Cup, mm-hmm, when his brother, if you guys remember, made
of course, yeah, PJ, yeah, PJ,
so his
Willett,
brother made all those comments, and then the captain sat him. I think it was Darren Clark was the captain that year. He sat Willett in the opening matches, and it like shattered Willett's confidence.
Mm-hmm.
And that wasn't even Willett's fault. So Tiger was put in an interesting spot. You either you play Patrick Reed and subject him to all the heckling, or you sit him, and it's sort of an admission of guilt. It's sort of a little bit of a show of weakness.
Mm-hmm.
And we all know Tiger is not very fond of showing any sort of weakness at all.
Did it feel like it was a distraction while you were over there?
Yeah, totally.
Yeah.
All anyone talked about for the first three. I mean, when the rumor started flowing about the caddy, it was like that was the only, the competition at that point was a distraction from the Reed story.
Oh, yeah. No, I'm sure, like,
media perspective.
Yeah.
I'm sure with the caddy, it was out of control, but just like the rules issue, like, did that carry over that long?
That was every single player had to answer questions about it. So
that's the definition of a distraction.
That's a distraction, I would say. Yep. Distraction. Way to go.
Also, I mean, again, and I don't want to take much away from Reed, but the definition of small sample size is what we see in some of these events. And, you know, we talk about when Reed was this world beater the first couple of these team events, we all said, how is he so good in these events, but he doesn't do anything in other events? Now, he did win the Masters, don't get me wrong. But, like, but my point is he played better than what you thought. Well, now you look, like you said, Dan, his record now is pretty average, and it just shows you how quickly these things can kind of change. So I would say he's not the greatest match play player in
absolutely
the world. He
not.
Had a hot start. He, by the way, was 8-1-3 with Jordan Spieth. He's 0-7 without Jordan Spieth. So that could
be an incredible stat.
Right. So I think it just shows you we probably overrated him a little in those first few events, and you know, now maybe he'll be underrated.
Well, you could make the argument that match play is a great barometer of kind of bursts of play and like kind of
getting hot.
Yeah, and in various energy. I mean, there's no question that Patrick Reed is an elite player, has a crazy good short game, and so all those things lend themselves well to match play and kind of, you know, pressure shots. And whereas stroke play is more the totality of your game, how you manage, you know, your mistakes over 4 days. Mm-hmm. And so there was a point in Patrick Reed's career in team events where he had this positive energy. He was kind of thrived off of the positive and negative energy that was going his way. And now it's possibly gone the other way where there's a lot of negative energy, not a lot of positive energy, and that's reflected in the way he plays.
All right, let's talk about...
One last thing about like match play and records. One of my takeaways from this week is like one person in these team matches, they're a fourth of the match, right?
Right.
So it's kind of unfair to point to one person and say he's a great match player. Maybe his partner was great that day. Maybe the other two guys sucked. Mm-hmm. Maybe he played great and he still lost. So it's I think looking at match play records, especially team records, and trying to derive any big truth from them, it's kind of a slippery slope.
Definitely. I mean, Lee Westwood still gets credit for that Medina win against Tiger when Nicholas Coulthard's made about 10 birdies in that match. I mean, you can have stuff like that happen. So it is weird.
That does bring up a good point about Ernie's advanced metrics. That would be a great advanced metric, which is you can actually identify individual contributions in team matches.
And I'm sure they have that information.
Yeah.
I'm sure they did.
All right. We got to talk about Tiger Woods because other than the course, obviously Royal Melbourne was incredible, but Tiger was the star of this event. Other than Patrick Reed, he's always the biggest story. But in particular, being a playing captain, there were so many questions. Could he handle both duties? At first, it was can he play and still be a captain? Then it became, well, maybe he should have just been a player and not a captain. He ends up winning on both accounts. He wins all three of his matches. He was undeniably the best player of the week. Dan, I mean, how impressive, obviously, you cover Tiger very closely. How impressive was this week to cap off what's been just an amazing year for him?
Yeah, it was an experience I won't forget. Watching a player who is clearly has everything working, including the driver. One of the things I've been so impressed with Tiger with the last couple months is he's hitting the driver so straight.
Hmm.
He has this little peel cut that he can trust and hit anywhere. I remember in the practice round watching Tiger, and you could sort of see he had these puppy eyes at this golf course that he knew would allow him to distinguish himself. You know, it wasn't one of these courses where you have to hit it 320 yards in the air and it's going to land soft and then hit, you know, wet that's going to spin back. He loves the artistry that some courses require. It's why he plays so well in the British Open, when he can use the ground, when he can hit high shots and hit low shots. And he knew he would have to do everything this week, and he had his entire arsenal. And so he was so excited, you could tell, just in the practice round, to show what he had. And, yeah, he was far and away the best player. And you know, going back to Thomas, we were talking about how JT had this great record. JT did not play very well the first 2 days. And he actually said in the press conference, I'm really happy that Tiger was my partner, because I probably would have lost both my matches if he wasn't. Tiger was never going to lose this week. It was a perfect course for the game that he has right now. He was probably below average in distance compared to the other guys in the field, but the course, it was 7,000 yards. Distance wasn't super important. It was a perfect course for him. He was fully locked in. Every part of his game was clicking. And if there was a tournament between those 24 guys at Royal Melbourne this week, he would have won by at least five.
Ooh. Wow. Ooh, wow. Maybe.
Isn't it amazing that in his early days he dominated because he did all these things, but the length was so impressive, and on a longer course he had a better chance than anybody. Now it's on these shorter courses. I mean, if they played the next 20 majors on a course like Royal Melbourne, he might beat Jack Nicklaus's record in that span. I mean, seriously, he's that much better suited for this type of golf, it seems.
Right.
It's what the greats do, though, right? Like, look at, I don't know, any great in any sport, LeBron James, or, you know, these guys who in the beginning of their career, they sort of beat you with just raw athleticism and power, and then they learn that once they get older, they can't do that anymore, so they adapt, and they change their game up, and they start to slice and dice more. And
Jordan's fadeaway.
Jordan's a great way. Yeah. You know, he started to do more back-to-the-basket stuff. Right. The great ones change.
No, I mean, what's amazing is the fact that earlier in his career, you know, people wrongly identified Tiger's greatest asset as his length.
Right.
Like, that was that was like 1/20th of what made Tiger Woods Tiger Woods. Right. And over time, it's been crystallized even further. Like, you know, would he have won the Masters by 12 shots if he wasn't so much longer than guys back then? Maybe not. But the point is that, you know, his ball striking ability, his creativity, his putting, his sort of sense of, you know, kind of, we always talk about his golf intelligence. Those are all the things that separate him from everyone else. And now when he's, you know, relatively healthy, it's daunting how good he can be. Of course, that leads the question about the whole Saturday and not playing himself. I'm sure you wanted to ask about that.
Yeah, no, Dan, when that first happened, you know, I know some people said, oh, this isn't surprising, but I think 90% of people were shocked that Tiger didn't play either of those two matches on Saturday. I get the point that once he didn't play in the morning, it was tough probably for him to warm up and get going for the second one, but I don't know, after the way he played the first 2 days and considering that the team was losing, what did you think going into that third day? Did you think we were going to see him play?
I thought we were going to see him play in the afternoon.
Okay.
I thought it was never realistic for him to play all five.
Agreed.
Given, you know, his body, whatever. But I thought he would set the pairings in the morning and practice for a little. I mean, go out there and captain for a little, whatever that means, you know, ride around in the golf cart and say a couple nice things to whisper sweet nothings in these guys' ears. And then I thought he was going to go and practice and play in the afternoon, absolutely, because of how well he was playing and because they were down 9-5 at the time. But I think, here's what I think. I think that it was the plan all along was for him not to play at all on Saturday.
Mm-hmm.
And I think by sticking to the plan, he wanted to send a message to his players, I'm not panicking. I'm not changing up this plan because we're down a couple. I still believe in you guys. So I think it was trying to put confidence in his teammates. And also, we probably do, like you were saying, Alex, underestimate just how long it takes him to get ready to play golf. It's like a 3-hour process.
Right.
So extremely surprised when he didn't reunite with JT in the afternoon.
Mm-hmm.
And if they didn't come back to win, or if they lost that session, you know, or if even just Ben On made the putt, there were a lot of things that he would have been really, really, really heavily criticized.
Yes.
He kind of risked, you know, his captaincy with that gamble, and it ended up paying off. But yes, I was very surprised.
Yeah, when you bring up how long it takes him to warm up for a round, I mean, you're looking at him only actually acting as an active captain for like half of the morning. And then he's out for the second half of the morning and then playing that afternoon. He's not really putting in any real hours as a captain out on the course.
Yeah, that would have been it because he wasn't on the first 2 days. Yeah.
Exactly.
Well, I think your theory, Dan, is I think probably the most plausible one, that, you know, he had no idea that he was going to play this well. You know, 36 holes on Saturday. Okay, I won't play Saturday. That seems like the day to miss. However, the other theory is that as the week went on, he's like, you know what, I'm going to play – I'm going to play Saturday afternoon. I'm not going to play in the morning. I'm going to play Saturday afternoon, and at some point I'm going to cut out of here, and I'm going to get ready. And then realizing that it was closer than it was, he's like, you know what? I can't extract myself from this.
Mm-hmm.
There's too much going on. I'm just not going to play this afternoon because for me to, you know, check out right now when all these matches are close and just disappear would be irresponsible, so I'm just going to miss the whole session.
Yeah.
Keeley's point is a really good one. If he did play on Friday or Saturday afternoon, he would have been the captain of his team, you know, quotes captain, whatever that means, for about an hour and a half, probably 2 hours, because it was 2 hours on Saturday morning, and then like the last 2 hours on Sunday. So he would have essentially at that point been a player with a lot of influence on the pairings.
Yeah.
Well, it was impressive on the course by him. Also off the course, leading the team in song on the bus and, you know, playing pranks on Paul Tesori, getting him back for something 20 years ago. And it seemed like all the guys, Dan, really, really enjoyed having him as a captain. I mean, we know how much he likes to be one of the guys, but it seemed like not only was he kind of one of the guys, but he also obviously has all of their respect as well.
They worship him.
Yeah.
I mean, let's just be real, and they would say the same thing. They worship him, and it's a totally different dynamic from in 2001 or 2, whenever, when it seemed like, even through 2005, 2006, when it seemed like guys didn't really have a relationship with Tiger, because the only lens they knew Tiger through was that he was the one kicking their ass every week. These guys grew up watching him and grew up idolizing him, so they don't think of him in the same way. So I think for them, he's this larger-than-life figure, and he's... To his credit, he's been pretty warm and pretty accepting and willing to take a lot of these guys under his wing. So, yeah, I mean, they worship him. They worship Tiger Woods.
All right. Well, thanks, Dan, for calling in. Get some sleep. Obviously, again, an exciting week, a great week for Tiger Woods to cap an incredible season. And, you know, next up we have a guy, Harold Varner III, who, you know, he's a guy who you never know. Maybe he makes it onto that next team. He was doing some promotional stuff, actually, over the weekend for the next one. It's at Quail Hollow in his neck of the woods, North Carolina. He also got in the mix at the QBE shootout. He had the lead at one point with partner Ryan Palmer. And, you know, he's just one of the funniest, kind of most likable guys on tour. So it was great to finally get him on the Golf Digest podcast. Please have a listen to our chat with Harold Varner III. Today's episode is brought to you by Whoop, the fitness tracker that is changing the way people track their fitness, sleep, and recovery to optimize their performance. We all want to find ways to improve our performance through sleeping better, training smarter, or being more mindful of how recovered our bodies are. Whether we want to be bringing our best performance to the course or in our day-to-day lives at work and at home. Whoop goes beyond tracking steps and provides personalized daily insight in real time into how recovered your body is, how much exertion and stress you've taken on, and how much sleep you should be getting. Get next-level insights into your sleep by being able to see the stages of sleep you get, how efficient your sleep is, and your overall performance for how much sleep you got compared to what your body needed. Automatically track your workouts and training, whether it be a long 18-hole round of golf or intense session at the gym. Based on the intensity of the training, you'll get real-time insight into how much exertion your body took on. Get daily recovery scores when you wake up that let you know how ready your body is to perform or if it needs rest to recover. All of these insights are provided within the Whoop app. The Whoop Strap 3.0 offers 5-day battery life and the ability to charge while wearing, so you'll never miss a beat of data and get a full 24/7 snap of your heart rate activity. If you're looking to improve the way you train, sleep, and recover, Whoop has provided our listeners a 15% offer for any Whoop membership. A Whoop membership comes with the Whoop Strap 3.0 for free, and you get access to the app based on the monthly plan you choose. Go to whoop.com today and use the code GD15 to save 15% off a membership to unlock your performance and start optimizing the way you train, sleep, and recover. That's Whoop, WHOOP.com, and use the code GD15 to get 15% off. All right, I'm excited to welcome to the Golf Digest podcast Harold Varner III. Harold, thank you so much for joining us today. How's it going?
Everything's good. Just getting ready to head to the QE shootout. So just ripping and running around town, getting some things done. Nothing crazy.
Harold, obviously you're about to play an event, but what is this time of year like for a player like yourself? We're recording this on the Monday of the President's Cup, you're not playing, but when you sort of head into the downtime and looking forward to next season, like what is this part of the year like for you?
It's still pretty busy. I usually go down to Florida and have a place down in Jacksonville Beach, so just go down there and practice and play till Christmas. But we moved into another house up here in Charlotte, so just getting everything situated, but just ready to get on the golf course, man. It's been a while since I've played every day. So, yeah, I had some time off. Didn't play Sea Island. So, that was good. I'm just getting everything taken care of. I don't know what I'm trying to think what I did the last few. I don't know, just playing golf, enjoying time with people you love the most. And, I don't know, nothing too extravagant, I guess.
We want to talk a lot of golf with you, but I wanted to ask you first. I know you were kind of upset about Ron Rivera getting let go by the Panthers, your favorite team. It seems like you kind of know him pretty well, and obviously, what can you say about the state of the Panthers?
I know him decently well. We've played golf together. We exchange texts. We talk on the phone. We've had some great conversations just about life, you know, not so much about what we do. It's been good. So, yeah, that part on the personal level, it wasn't really fun, but it's just sad to see that, like, you know, people are just putting the blame on one person. It's not one person, especially when we don't have the best team. At the end of the day, it doesn't matter if you don't have the most talented guys in the right positions. It doesn't matter who's coaching. That's just my personal opinion, and our best players are hurt. And, you know, you just try to bite your tongue. I went to the Redskins game, and, yeah, it was unfortunate we lost, but in Charlotte, we don't provide a culture to where we see things through. So, like, when there's 6 minutes left, you know, everyone left. So it just kind of – just shows that, like, we're like leaves on trees, you know, like if the wind blows, we just get blown off. So it's okay. It's good to see people's true colors, because one day it's going to turn around. I thought there could have been a better way of firing someone. I just, you know, the person that's going to catch the most, I guess, get hurt the most, I think, is Christian McCaffrey, just because, you know, he was in his groove. You know, he was in having a record season. I just hope that he can finish it off, because you get paid off of how you perform. And to have a record-breaking year would be awesome going into contracts. And I'm looking forward to in football. I mean, obviously in any sport, you want the guy to get paid. That's the best player. And you just don't want that to be, you know, just kind of whatever, or just hurt by it just because we fired a coach in the middle of the season, you know?
Right,
for sure.
So, yeah, I have a lot to say about that.
We can let you go. You can go another 20 minutes on
this. This is awesome.
2019, I asked you kind of what your off season is like, but you're coming off a very strong 2019 season, including playing the final pairing of the PGA Championship. I'm just curious, kind of looking back at the year, when you sort of reflect on peaks and valleys and goals for the year ahead, where does that experience factor in, and how much does it sort of stoke your desire to be a contender in major championships?
I mean, the same thing. It's just all about a learning curve. I just haven't been practicing a lot lately. So I'm going to amp it up, you know, just get it going back right. Just keep doing what I'm doing, because what ends up happening is, you know, you just keep learning, you just keep understanding, like, what you need to do to get better. And basically that's what I'm going to keep doing.
Yeah.
I don't know. I enjoy working at it. I enjoy the level of not knowing, the unknown, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's a really cool place to be. Like, cause like at the end of the day, then the only thing you can rely on is what you've worked on. So just getting back in the groove, getting back into working, doing what I love to do. I love playing golf and seeing the world, so why would I not just keep working hard?
Do you pinpoint one element or a couple of elements of your game that you feel like, you know, this is the area that can bring me to the next level if I can just get this to a higher
level? No, man. I mean, I need to hit it close to the hole with my irons. They just haven't been very good, you know, the last 2 or 3 years, but that's okay. Like, I know that's what I need to work on, but, you know, I'm always working on it. It's not like I haven't been working on that.
Right.
So it's just like a process of understanding that, like, good things are coming, you know, like something's going to click, and I'll remember that, and I'll use that as, like, you know, just a friendly reminder of all the time of how to, when I get in just a little flux, how to fix it. So it's fun, man. I enjoy that part of it. I think I'm getting better, and if I keep getting better, I'll keep getting closer to where I want to be.
What was playing with Brooks Koepka, obviously the best player in the world, in the final group at a major, what was that like? And, you know, I don't know if you'd played with him before in other rounds. How different was it in that atmosphere, and how much, you know, banter did you guys have, or if any, and just what was that whole situation like? That must have been a pretty intense day.
I really wasn't worried about him at all. Like, it was just the whole, you know, in the final group of a major, didn't matter who you're going to play with, it was going to be pretty, pretty nuts. It was super fun, man. I enjoyed every second. I was super nervous. Mm-hmm. One thing I remember is how fast I warmed up. It was like crazy how fast I warmed up. So it was just, man, I learned a lot. The actual day sucked.
Yeah.
Just because of, like, you're, you know, you feel like you've worked your tail off to, like, get there and to play well when it matters most. But it was a tough day of golf. Like, it wasn't, like, it wasn't windy and I hit some bad shots. It was, like, insanely windy.
Mm-hmm.
It was super tough. And then just to see, like, the fans, like, you know, showcase. I mean, dude, Brooks shot 76. So it
right.
wasn't, like, yeah. 75. So it wasn't, like, it was really that easy.
Right, right.
But just to hear people, like, doing the little gag thing, I just, that's just not my cup of tea. Not that I play golf and it's like a super prima donna sport, like, we'll be respectful, but just, I never grew up that way. I want to see you play your best and we beat you,
right? I recall, because you're yeah,
go ahead.
No, I was gonna say, you were pretty outspoken about their reaction and how that was disappointing to you. I mean, I guess seeing it up close, it was probably impressed upon you how difficult a spot that would be, especially in those conditions.
Yeah, just why would you wish that upon anyone? I don't know, man. Just because show where our society is, how sad that is. You would rather someone do worse so that you can beat them than him do really well and you have to work your tail off to be good. It's just, we'll do anything in the world to find a shortcut. And everyone's been there. Everyone's like, wants a shortcut to be successful. And just isn't possible. So it's just, it is what it is. It's just, I didn't like it.
Right. Well, I mean, you know, I'm not going to say you gained more fans than if you had won the tournament, but you certainly gained a lot of fans from how you handled, as you said, a tough day out there. Have you always been able to kind of, you know, put away a bad round and handle it that well? Because obviously you got rave reviews from the way you handled everything.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know, man. At the end of the day, no, I mean, no offense to Brooks, but no one's going to remember in 30 years who won that major, except like the guy who, I don't know, man. This, all this material stuff is just going to go away. It's just something, you know, right now people get off to. So we live in the now, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
There's always something newer. There's always something better. It's like, it's the reason why there's so many, the divorce rate's so high is because everyone thinks the grass is greener on the other side. So it's just, man, I don't know, man. It's not the end of the world. Just keep it moving.
Right.
Harold,
there's so much more to it.
Yeah. I've read a fair amount about your beginnings in golf and how you got started in playing a course in your home for $100. I'm just curious, when you look back at your progress as a golfer, when for you was the moment like, wow, I could actually make a living playing this game?
When I started making money, to be honest with you. Like, I just always wanted to play golf. I never really thought about doing anything else. So when I made some money, I was like, dude, I mean, this is good. But I just enjoy competing, man. I love, like, that, you know, right now, like, I can't really feel it. But, like, once we get on the tee on Thursday, even though it's a two-man best ball tournament, I'm going to sit there and I'm going to thrive under that. Like, I'm going to love that little, like, few jitters you get. It just takes – sometimes you get into it real quick and then sometimes you don't. But I just know that – I enjoy that, like, I don't know what it is, the fire. I mean, you name it, man. I ain't got no clue.
And who's your partner? Who's your partner this week?
Ryan Palmer. So we're gonna have a good time. I played at Bubba last year and had such a blast. It's just funny how people hate on him and like don't like him and they don't know him. He's one of the best guys on tour.
Hmm.
I really like him.
You're gonna hit a pretty big birthday this year in August. Does it? Sorry to remind you that. Does it feel like you've been out on tour that long already, or has it gone really quickly?
That's a great question. No, it does not. You know, they talk about retirement and stuff, and I'm like, man, I mean, retirement, dog, I'm just getting kicking. So it's pretty funny at the same time. You know, with age, you know, there comes responsibility, and I you know, like, I am maturing a little bit. Like, I feel like having fun, man. Who doesn't? I just, you can't let that fun get in the way of you taking care of business, because at the end of the day, I still want to see how good I can be. You know, we can always have fun sometime later, but I can see in the decisions I make that I'm getting older.
Just making more. In what way? In what ways are you showing more maturity?
Doing what's right, man. Just doing. Not so much golf. Just golf isn't really. You know, it's the only real sport that I feel like you. The decisions you make, like whatever today is. I mean, I guess this is in life too. This, but like the decision I make today, how much closer is that going to get me to being better in July? You know what I mean? So sure. It's just. I can tell that decisions I make. Like, I'm having fun right now. Like, you know, just pick your spots.
Yeah.
You certainly look like you're having fun out there at all times. I think it was a practice round at the Northern Trust at Liberty National. You were playing with some heavy hitters there, Tiger, Brooks, and DJ, if I remember. And you were walking alongside them playing, and you had them all in stitches, like, the whole time. I mean, is that kind of how you always roll?
Man, this is how good of a memory I have. I literally had forgotten I played with them until you said something.
Yeah.
yeah, it was fun. I mean, I don't know, man. I just enjoy being around people that are, you know, right now they're better than me. So I love picking their brain. I love like seeing all the information I can get from, you know, I love joking. So it's a privilege to be in that group because I can gain information that I didn't know before. I don't know. That's the way I look at it, more or less.
You're representing the Jordan brand. I'm curious how much golf, how much time you've had with MJ himself. You ever played golf with him, for instance?
I've played golf with him. I've been around him a little bit. Not a ton, but enough to where I've actually, the next day after I shot 81 at the PGA, I talked to him for about 10, 15 minutes. That was probably one of the best conversations that I'd had with him. He's really good at just, simplifying things. Like if you have a question, like just picking his brain, you know, like why would I not pick the best basketball player to ever play his brain, you know? Like it's just funny, like you're around Tiger, you're around MJ, you're around all these good athletes, and how simple they want you to keep it, and that's pretty cool to me.
How did that conversation come about?
I called him. What do you mean? Shot 81 and I was like, hey, this is what I think happened, and then we just went through this is what I was thinking, you know, what do you think? You know, like, I want to get better. Like, so I text him, I was like, MJ, I just want to talk to you about what happened yesterday. And I don't know, what else are you going to get better? I mean, they ain't going to come to you, I know that for sure.
Obviously, you're a huge sports fan. We already talked about the Panthers and now MJ. What other athletes have you gotten to play with or do you enjoy playing golf with?
I don't play with a bunch of athletes. I like playing with my boys at home. I mean, I'm super fortunate. I played with Steph. I don't know who else. I mean, I played with, but you know, you get to rub shoulders with other people that want to get into golf, and it's super cool. I enjoy it, but like, there's nothing better than what we did on Saturday. Like the guys that kind of helped me grow up, like playing golf. They always just took me around, you know, around the surrounding areas. Like 50 of those guys that are best friends of my dad and about 30 of my best friends all played. We played in a big group on Saturday, had a nice little skin spot, and then we went to my parents' land where I just bought some land for my parents and put their house on it. And we just hung out, made a bonfire, grilled out. You know, like that's the stuff I enjoy. Like that's why I want to work hard so that like I can do those kinds of things.
We'd probably be remiss. You mentioned, you know, your parents' property and talking about the kind of viral moment of you mowing their lawn. I'm curious when you kind of put that out there and actually followed up on it and obviously tweeted out the picture. Did you anticipate there being as big a reaction to it as there was?
No, I was ashamed that people just seriously just. I think it's sad that people. That people are so, I guess, crazy about that. Like when I think that's what you should do,
right?
You know what I mean? Like that's the right thing to do. Like when you have time to help your parents, you should help your parents.
Right. I mean, it sounds like everything you're saying is like you've made a real focus on sort of maintaining perspective and not getting too caught up in you know status or your results on tour. So it feels like that's pretty consistent with who you are.
Yeah, I mean, it can be taken away tomorrow, so, like, why would I abuse it? I don't know. It sounds so stupid, but it can be taken away tomorrow. I mean, you see it all the time, like, one decision could just mess up people's career, and it doesn't mean you can't have fun, but it's just the way it is. So I'm super, it's a privilege, not like a given.
Sure.
You know, actually, you had another viral moment recently, which was pretty funny. The video game with Arturo, your Call of Duty brother. That was pretty interesting. How much gaming do you do, I guess? And do you have a lot of these kind of friends through video games?
I play when I can. I probably play, gosh, I don't know. Sometimes I play a lot, and then there'll be times where I might not play for a week or something. You know what I mean? It's just hit or miss, but, man, that's a crazy deal, man. He's a great kid. it was pretty cool to meet him. Just, man, it's hard to not have a good perspective when you meet people like that. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Tiger plays that game, right? Do you ever matched up with him?
I didn't know Tiger played Call of Duty.
I think he said that a couple times, actually. Yeah, I think he's into that.
Well, he knows where it is.
I mentioned that we're recording this on Monday of the President's Cup. I'm curious, how much attention will you pay to that, and you know, how much of a goal is that for you to play in team competition for the U.S.?
I mean, I'll keep up with. I don't know, man. I'm not a big golf watcher anyway, so it's. I don't know. I'm just so biased off of like who I really, you know. Joaquin Niemann's going to be my partner at the Zurich this year, so. I mean, I'm pulling for that kid, man. He's a great kid,
right.
So I don't know. I guess go USA, and I love being down in Australia. This will be the first year I won't be down there in a long time, so I just.
Right.
It's a great time to be down there right now.
Right, that's what you won the Australian PGA. That was a big win for you. And my understanding is your caddy is Australian. Is that correct?
Yeah, he's from. He's actually from Melbourne.
Okay, so he obviously must have some insight into that golf course. So, to what extent? I mean, what's that relationship like? And to what extent has he? What role has he played in your career?
I mean, I've gotten better. He's helped me out a lot. I enjoy talking to him. I haven't had a lot of caddies since I've been on tour. I've only had two caddies since I've been on tour, and between the web and the tour, maybe four. So I haven't had a lot of people. It's just all about getting along with people, man. If you get along with them, like, it's all good.
Right.
You know, like, he wants to see you play well. You want to play well. So it's just like, all right, let's go.
Perfect. Well, listen, Harold, really appreciate the time and the insight, and want to wish you the best of luck this year and obviously this week as well.
Awesome. Thanks for having me, and I'm sure I'll be talking to you guys soon.
Sounds good, Harold. Thank you. Take care.
Take care, Harold.
Hey, you too. Bye-bye.
All right. Thanks again to Harold Varner III for joining us. And we just want to wrap up with a few other things. You know, the President's Cup was obviously first and foremost last week, but we did have the Korn Ferry Q School, a couple good stories out of that. So our story, best one-day story, that goes to Callum Terran, who shot an opening 75 and yet managed to get his card a 66, 68, 65 finish to earn his card on the number. Well done by him. Apparently he was hitting, according to our Ryan French Monday Q info, hitting duck hooks on that first day. He shot a 42 on the back nine. He looked completely lost. Turned it around. So good for him.
That's absolutely terrifying.
And the most pressure, it sneaks in there, and then you're able to turn it around like that.
Yeah, it's really scary when you're in that situation, and it's not like, oh, you know, made a couple bad mistakes,
right.
Missed a couple putts, but I'll get it. It's like, no, I am hitting monster duck hooks. My swing is gone. What happens now? Like, that's amazing that he was able to pull himself out of that.
Exactly. This week in Tour Pros are Just Like Us, another Q schooler, Austin Truslow. Shout out to him. Apparently, he chips with one hand, and he chips very well because he shot a final round 66. He ended up missing by one shot. It was a crazy situation. The last guy in the course bumped about 10 guys off, which sucked because it was the top 14 ties. But anyway, I thought that was impressive. Sam, have you ever considered that with your chipping
game?
What
are you implying?
With the scoops?
Couldn't hurt at this point?
One-handed, he does it. And he's almost, you know, a tour-level player.
Wait, which hand?
You know, the strong hand.
You wouldn't do it with your left hand if you're right.
If you're out there chipping with one hand, you're capable of anything.
I guess if you're left putt with just your left hand.
Yeah.
Some people
so you're
say,
not just like shoving it.
Yeah. I guess, I mean, it seems such.
One-handed.
Yeah.
I mean, there's, again, Ryan French has a good video of it. It's pretty impressive. But anyway, you could
Something to consider.
Yeah, something to consider for all those struggling out there. And then finally, our stat of the week, and it's kind of pick a stat, pick a Tiger stat, any Tiger stat. Second undefeated record for him at a President's Cup. Of course, the other one was in 2009 when he went 5-0 and he had the epic club twirl and walk. He also broke Phil Mickelson's record for most wins at a President's Cup. He now has 27 wins, not points, wins in President's Cup play.
So it means he has more points because obviously he's
First player to win a major and captain a winning team since Jerry Barber in 1961. First playing captain to go undefeated in a team event win since Sam Snead at the 1959 Ryder Cup. So again, just a ton of stuff with him. This guy, we didn't know he was going to come back. He wins the Masters. He ties Sam Snead's record with his 82nd win. He captains and is the best player for the U.S. in the President's Cup.
Right. And year so I was just reading Dan's story from yesterday. So he was announced as captain right after he finished second at the Valspar. Remember when he fell short against Paul Casey? And at that point, you know, there was a lot of uncertainty about what was next. I mean, obviously, everyone was encouraged by that because he had a near run. It was like, okay, the guy proved that he can contend once in a while. You didn't think he was going to be a reasonable or reasonable threat week in and week out. So. Amazing, because at that point he was like, okay, I'll be President's Cup captain. He probably agreed to that well before that tournament. So he's like, this is the next stage of my career, you know, I want to stay relevant in golf, and I guess I'll be the President's Cup captain, and you know, and help these young guys play, and some of them will know who I was.
Well, take it back a few months before that, the last at the 2017 President's Cup, that press conference when he said, yes, I could see a situation where I won't come back and play, and he was there as an assistant captain. You know, that's pretty young to be an assistant captain, and you're sitting up there, you haven't played, no one knows what's going on. I remember walking back into the media center there at Liberty National and being like, oh man, he sounds bummed. It's gloom and doom, you know?
Yeah.
And to think 2 years later, he's the best player on that team. It's just wild.
It's so hard to like meter excitement. You know, because I feel like every big thing that happens with him, you're like, wow, that was amazing. I never thought that he'd be able to do that. But like, this is it. Like, he can't have that many more left. So like, don't expect anything more. And then he does something else amazing. It's like, this could go on for another like 5 years, right? Like,
it really could. I mean, we hope so. Sam just poured himself. I don't know. What did you
Was there like a
Pellegrino?
Are you toasting
an open Pellegrino?
No, I was starting to get thirsty.
Just popping bottles.
Well, we talked a lot, obviously, about the President's Cup and everything else. So makes sense. Well, anyway, that was a very fun last major event to what was a great year. Thanks to Dan Rappaport for joining us. Obviously, thanks to Harold Varner III. For joining us as well. Thanks to our producer, as always, Greg Gottfried. Thank you for listening. Please subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts if you haven't done so already. And check back next week when we run down the top 10 major championships of the decade.